And if you learn whatever that word means about the memory credentials of the past.
I was just going to say, I agree. I found the figure on page, I think it's 43, to be more helpful than the computer.
Figure on page 43.
Of the textbook.
So let's think about this for a minute. Because this raises some interesting questions. And what we said so far is that we have a flow from that point to that point. The thing that causes the flow is an energy gradient along that path. And the thing that determines how fast that flow takes place is some resistance. So we said that here we have a high energy, and here we have a low energy, and in some, we end up with a driving force. And that leads to flow. And that flow depends on resistance. That relationship is an increase in resistance, the flow goes down. It's Jan's problem.
Yes.
Well, it's not your problem. It's your driving. I don't know how to park and you're driving. I don't think I want to know anymore. So that's the fundamental thing that we talked about. Right? Okay. So then you say, then what we did here then is say, well, we're gonna talk about a cell. And we're gonna talk about flow across the membrane of the cell. Okay? And if we're talking about flow across the membrane of the cell, we're not going to talk about resistance per se. We're going to talk about the number of pathways. So it's the inverse of resistance. So it's going to be the conductance. And so now we say, here's the conductance. And so now this is, there's the flow, and by plus conductance as the conductance goes up over. Okay? Okay, and then we said, all right, what is it that we want to talk about flowing across here? And we said, let's talk about potassium. And we said that there's going to be a large concentration of potassium on the inside, a smaller concentration of potassium on the outside. And there's a pathway for it, so there's going to be flow of potassium on the outside. We also said a couple of things. He said that in addition to this potassium, there's going to be a whole bunch of other chemical species out here that carry charge, a whole bunch of chemical species in here that carry charge. And then we noticed that this potassium ion carries a light position. And so there are actually two forces that are acting on that potassium. One is the chemical concentration gradient, and the other is any gradient that there may be a positive charge in. So now, we can add, this was now a high concentration, okay. This is a low concentration. And I can do a similar thing. And say, okay, I've got a high concentration of pluses and a low concentration of pluses, and they're going to give a driving force. And there's going to also be then, that's going to then lead to of pluses. This is leading to flow of pluses. And there's also going to be some sort of a conductance here, a pathway. And the relationship is that the conductance increases, the flow increases. So those are the that's where we started. So we're really starting with just one thing. We're starting with that general model. Flow. And then we said, okay, now, because there are some other ions out here, and other ions in here, and there are some species of ions out here, sodium, that carry plus charges as well. So we started the discussion here, we're not going to model that. We started the discussion here by saying, if only potassium can move then at some point, there's going to be an accumulation of positive charges out here. Because there's not only the potassium and all the other charge, there's also the sodium. So now, this flow is going to be flow in, and this flow is going to be flow out. This green is causing flow in. If there's an accumulation of positive charges, this is on the outside of the cell, that's on the inside of the cell. And so we said, what happens if there's no net movement? Which means that this plus this is zero. And we talked about the equilibrium. And we said that when we define the potential, there's a potential difference. People often use difference, but it's potential between the inside and the outside. If there's accumulation on the outside, then the difference between the inside and the outside is negative. And it shows us that this gradient is moving stuff in. If there's accumulation, if this high region is on the inside, but we're moving to the outside, it tells us is out. So now let's go to the model. In the model, we had two species. We had potassium, we had sodium. We had a concentration on the inside, we had a concentration on the outside. And we could change the concentrations on the outside. And we had the relative permeability. We had the number of gates that were open, the number of channels, the number of doors that were open, for potassium relative to that for sodium. And we noticed on that program also that there was a negative ion in there, there was a chloride ion in there, and we said, you know what? Let's remove that from consideration. And so we said, let's make the relative permeability of that essentially zero. There were negative ions on the inside, negative ions on the outside, but we're not going to talk about that. It will affect it a little. It won't affect the plus charge gradient. It will affect the minus charge gradient. But we'll just eliminate that. The other thing we didn't say, it just had to be fortuitous, is that the equilibrium potential for chloride is essentially the same as the rest of the equilibrium itself. The chlorides move back and forth if they know there's such movement. So what does this mean? This means that I have two possibilities. One possibility is I don't know anything about any of this stuff to start with. And in doing that, all I can deal with is what I've put on the board, what I've talked about. The other possibility is I heard something about this someplace else. And so I have all that information that I have to deal with. So the trick is to say, if that's not on my picture, I won't worry about it. It's just like saying, when I squeeze the hose, what does the model tell you? It told you it won't do anything because it's not in the model. And this is a common issue. One of the problems, if you had physiology before, if you're a nurse, if you're an EMT, if you're lots of things like that where you've heard a lot of the words that we're going to use, and you've had associations with other things that we're going to use, you tend to want to make your database as big as possible and as inclusive as possible to get as big a big picture as you can. And what that leads to is confusion lots of times. Sometimes it leads to clarity, but more times than not, it leads to confusion. Because you say that I've heard all those words, so yes, I know about them because I learned these associations. But in fact, the nurse, because of the nurse's training, the EMT, because of the EMT training, and a lot of other healthcare professionals learn associations of things and they don't deal with mechanisms. So they get them some false sense of security that, yeah, I know about this. Because I've heard all of it. I know what that patient looks like. I've heard it. And I'll tell you stories of some graduate nurses that I used to do respiratory physiology with years ago, who would come to me and say, you know, I've been in the intensive care unit, I've been in the cardiac care unit for 25 years. And I never knew what that meant. So that's kind of caution. So we don't have negatives on here. Let's not worry about negatives. So what do we do? Well, we said we have this model, and so now what? Well, now what? We have the pluses, we have the K's, but now we want to put the sodiums on there as well. So we have another one. We have a sodium. There's a high sodium, and there's a low sodium. That's going to give us a driving force for sodium, and that's going to cause flow of sodium, and then there's going to be a conductance for sodium as well. Whereas the conductance increases, the flow increases. And now we said, okay, now here's what we can do. We can change this number. We can change this number over here. And we can change these conductances. And so let's predict what we think will happen. Yeah. Each of those final places that we're going to see is going to be a place where there's no net movement of ions across the liver. So what do? We said, let's make it just as easy for the potassiums to go through as the sodiums to go through. And let's make these gradients very nearly the same, or essentially the same. And we decided, many of us decided, that in that case, there would not be a membrane potential developed. Because when this gradient pushed the potassium out, there was an increase in positive charges here, tending to push positive charges in. And gee, this sodium gradient caused a positive charge to move in, as well as this gradient pushing on that sodium. As a result of that, when one ion came out, the other one went in, and so there's no accumulation. And then we said, okay, that makes sense. That's good. What happens if I make this conductance for potassium a whole lot larger than the conductance for sodium? And we predicted that there'd be increase in what? There'd be an increase in what kind of flow? There'll be potassium move, more potassium moving out than sodium moving in. And what will happen to this gradient? It'll increase, that gradient will increase, and so there'll be an accumulation of positive charges on the outside. And so the membrane potential we get more negative. And then we said, all right, maybe that makes sense a little bit. What happens if I increase the relative permeability to sodium so that it's higher than it is to potassium? Now what's going to happen? The gradient again increases, except now it's in the opposite direction. So now there's going to be more sodium going in than potassium going out. There's going to be accumulation of plus charges on the inside. And now this high positive is on the inside, not the outside. And where we started out, where potassium conductance was highest, we said this flow plus this flow balance. This driving force plus that driving force balance this driving force. Now we're saying that this driving force plus this accumulation balances that driving force. And what we found in the model is that if we increase the sodium permeability, positive charges on the inside of the cell accumulated, continue to accumulate, but I got to a point where it didn't accumulate anymore. It reached a maximum.
Could you write that up? One driving force plus the other balances the sodium driving force. And that's.
So what we said is situation one. Okay? Conductance or potassium. So what's larger than the conductance? Said was that the driving force or the flow, of potassium ions from in to out was balanced by two things, by the sodium flow in. Sodium flow caused by the chemical gradient and the plus charges, which were going to be part of sodium, caused by the charge force. So this driving force in flow was balanced by this flow. And that flow. Because charge force tended to push ions in. It could have been sodium ions, they could have been potassium ions because the charge was there. Then we said, what happens if we make the conductance of sodium a lot higher than the conductance of potassium? So we just turn the situation around. Now we're going to have a lot of sodium going into the cell. There's going to be positive accumulation inside the cell. And the flow in is balanced by the flow out. The flow out is caused by this chemical gradient and the charge gradient. And what we said was we got to a point where that didn't change anymore. How many people reached that point in the model? So it's just like saying that the permeability of conductance of sodium is so high compared to potassium that I can ignore the potassium. And so what I've reached at that number, that left over, that limit, is the equilibrium potential for sodium. And we could do the same thing with potassium. If we increase the potassium conductivity, our conductance, or permeability, so that it's so much greater than sodium, that that accumulation on the outside doesn't change anymore, then it's like saying it's no longer permeable to sodium. So I've reached the equilibrium potential for potassium. So on that scale of millivolts, here's zero, here's negative, here's positive. And what we just said is, if these gradients are the same, if the chemical gradients are the same, and the equilibrium potential is zero, the number of gates for sodium, the number of gates for potassium that are open are equal. And if there's an accumulation on the outside here, it means that there must be more potassium channels open than sodium channels. And if the membrane potential is positive and the accumulation is on the inside of the cell, there must be more sodium gates open than potassium. Let me tell you that it may be frustrating sometimes, but you will always do better to try to figure it out and be wrong a couple of times than to start asking why, than waiting for somebody to tell you the right answer and follow them. Because then it's not true. So you can't really necessarily use it because that's a different situation. You have your own mind. Whatever it is, leads you someplace, then you actually can work things out. It will make sense to you. So that's what we did with modeling here. And the purpose of that is we spent an hour and a half to 2 hours or more up here going through that argument. Okay? Going through that argument and talking about each one of these situations. But you didn't have any way to really test it. So you went down there and started plugging in numbers. And then you began to see, oh, wait a minute, this little piece doesn't make sense. That little piece doesn't make sense.
So when we were talking about does that require that the other
larger than what we had a little while ago, and I now allow it to get to its equilibrium potential, how will that equilibrium potential compare to what it is in the first situation?
Now, looking at the graph that you mentioned, why is one so much larger in magnitude than the other one? Like, contraction and pull drag are only on the
Oh, but you see, this 30, and she's looking at the graph on D12. Because of perhaps the nature of the way that the sodium and the potassium moves through their respective chains.
Even
if the conductance is the same, if you make the concentrations exactly equal, then maybe you'd get there. But
it's not something to do with the actual quality of the ion.
No, but it may have something to do with the geometry. And the geometry of the channel. So this number 5 represents the highest point that membrane potential gets in this pattern. But it doesn't represent the equilibrium potential. The equilibrium potential is way above that. So this tells you that sodium channels are opening, sodium channels are opening, sodium channels are opening, sodium channels are opening, and then they're starting to close, and or potassium channels are starting to open. And when you get to this point, you're at a point where, in essence, the number of sodium channels open and potassium channels open are the same. And now you're having more potassium channels open than sodium channels. Anything else? Does that help us? So you're getting a little bit of idea of why we bothered to do it. Hopefully another indication that the struggle is worth something. That's a hard thing. That's a hard thing to come to do with it.
Could you tell me again which part is the absolute versus relative?
Yes. And somebody on their card said, tell me exactly where this happens. I won't mention names because I don't remember who said it. But this is not going to be very satisfying at all.
Above threshold and relatives below-ish? Is that what you're saying?
No, I think what I'm saying, well, yeah, you can say that, yeah.
Okay.
And why? Well, because those time and activation gates are closed here. And in order to reset, the voltage gate has to reset first. So a little bit of time after that, after you've come back, the voltage gate's resetting, then the time and activation gates can be set open. And so that channel can again be open. But at that point in time, there are a lot of potassium channels open, causing the membrane potential to be less than what the resting potential is, or something, more negative. Less and more is difficult to talk about. But it becomes more negative than the resting potential. So to be able to open those gates at this point, I have to move the membrane potential farther than I would normally move it from resting, so that's why it's a relative refractive degree. Okay? Yeah, by increase. Yeah. Well, you tell me. Here's the cell. Here are two cells. Let's say it's the same characteristics, the same characteristics of the cell. And why is it the same? How do I know it's the same? How do I know that this cell is essentially the same as that cell? They're both circles and they're both green. Okay? So they're the same. And let's say that I make this concentration like that. And this concentration like that. And in this situation, let's say I keep this concentration inside the same. And I make this one out smaller. So, in our stepwise fashion, how is the flow of potassium out here going to compare to here? And more here. If I have the same number of positive ions out here, starting with both situations, so I put, where is the accumulation of positives going to be bigger? Here and here, on top. So the membrane potential will be more negative here.
In what case would the relative refractory period be over? I can't think right now. I don't know why.
That's all right.
In what instances would that be overcome? I mean, what would somebody have to do? Does that ever really happen in practical situations? And how often common is that?
What would you have to do? Question is, if this membrane is in a relative refractory period, what has to happen in order for it to generate another action potential? She said, what? Let's draw this picture. Now this is, you're going to be really amazed at what I do for us. Go ahead.
Voila!
Okay.
That's like
magic. It was. I do that sometimes. What she said was, if this is the threshold, and in order to reach the threshold down here, I'm in a relative refractory period, so I have to raise the membrane potential from this point all the way up to here. I have to depolarize it more. Okay? Right? So I have to move ions. I have to move ions across that membrane. More ions across the membrane. That's what I have to do. So let's think about how I get ions there in the first place. Because we saw yesterday, those who are here and paying attention to our wonderful report, who this evening will be in the spin room interpreting.
did what to his face. They'll be a little less coherent tonight than they were yesterday. But what they told you was, when positive ions entered the cell here, when those sodium gates opened, it created a positive charge gradient from section B that went, caused movement both in both directions. And at the same time, they had difficulty seeing it until they got clarity. Until the fog raised and the rain went away, and they saw, wait a minute, there are positive ions coming toward me because there's a gradient created by my neighbor. And what happened then is that this piece of the membrane became depolarized. Okay? And in that situation, with that going along normally in an axon, you're not going to see that relative refractory period being overcome because there are only so many ions available, so many ions moving in and out. There are other situations, however, where that can happen. So the question that none of you asked is, how in the hell did this process start in the first place? Because we said, this is the middle of the axon. So the question has to come about, how did that start in the first place? Well, if we said that the cell body was up here, and that there was a synapse down there. The charge from the synapse. Okay, let's think about that. We said that now this is going to move in that direction. The axon tends to move in that direction. It's only moving in one direction. So you propagate it down. And what I asked, what happened, the response was, well, wait a minute, doesn't charge resulting from a synapse cause something? So where is the synapse that I was talking about that's going to cause something to happen? Pardon? On the neuronal body, okay? And so we'll say that there's some synapses here. Here's some dendrites. And there's another dendrite. And that synapse. Oh, look at this. Do you have anything, any idea about what happens at that synapse? What happens at that synapse? Do what? What happens at that synapse?
Neurotransmitters.
What do they do? Okay. They come out of here and they move toward here on the loop. They're going gradient, they diffuse, and they bind to what on this membrane?
Receptors.
And what does that cause to happen? What does it cause to happen when they bind the receptor? It doesn't start the wave. It what? It opens some channels. Oh. What kind of channel would that be?
Ligand-gated.
A ligand or ligand-gated channel. Okay? And then, what do you think is going to happen? If I open a sodium channel right there, what do you think is going to happen? Sodium's going to flow in. And why is sodium going to flow in? The gradient. And because the concentration of sodium outside is more, the greater than the sodium inside. Oh, okay. So we have these sodium charges coming in here, then where are they going to go? Where are they going to go? They're not going to go anywhere. It's going to sit there. Well, maybe. Will they cause anything else in that cytosol to move? It might cause voltage-gated channels to move. I don't think so, because the voltage-gated channels are stuck in this membrane. And although it's a fluid mosaic and they can move around a little bit, they're not going to go from one part to the other. What would they cause to move in that cytosol? Other charged ions. Okay, what charge? Positive or negative?
Positive.
Why?
They repel.
Because we've got a concentration gradient for positive ions. So there are two possibilities. Sodium ions might move that way because there's a sodium gradient. Or when that positive charge comes in, positive charges are going to move that way. It's another ion. Maybe sodium. And what's going to happen? What's going to happen when that happens? What's going to happen to this piece of membrane? It's going to depolarize. Okay. Now, I don't think they told you about this in this college. Did they tell you about neurons and cell bodies and axons and histology? Yeah, what did they tell you? Yes, okay.
I said you
were going to have a drawing. That is such a magnificent drawing.
It is very, yeah. It's very good.
Okay.
The arrows make it look like the sodium's coming right through the cell body. Is it probably a membrane?
No.
It just goes right through.
It's because this door opens and that sodium flows in. And now there's a local gradient, there's a local concentration here, it's greater than here, so that sodium diffuses in all directions.
But isn't the concentration to the right and left of it?
Sure.
Also?
Oh, you want me to go ahead?
Yeah, if you're sure that it's concentration, yeah.
Okay. So it's going to do wherever the gradient takes.
Okay.
But the direction that we're interested in, ultimately, is this direction. Because we started by asking a question about this piece. So now tell me what they told you about that. There's an axon hillock, whatever the hell that is. Okay? An axon hillock is right here. So what do you think distinguishes the axon hillock from this soma membrane?
Your
what?
Because
I don't know about granules. This is granules are beyond me. Because that's just too detailed for my mind.
Well, after the
axon. After I have the axon hillock. Make up your mind. Do you think it's at or do you think it's after?
After.
Why would I call that piece of membrane something different if it's the same as this?
It looks like a
cytosol. No, cytosol transition is over here. Don, tell me again, why did you say what you said? Either. 50-50, but what led to that? What led to that?
Because your picture, you specifically drew it outside of what you're representing as your axon.
Okay. Alright. I drew it on this side. I drew it between the cell body and what I call the rest of the axon.
So that's some sort of threshold. We have to get some sort of...
Well, that's some sort of something.
Yeah.
And what did you tell me you think you might expect to find in that axon hillock that you don't find over here? Voltage gated, what kind of channels?
Ion.
Voltage gated.
Sodium ion.
So voltage gated kinase activation channels. Well, let's find out what kind of channel it is. channel is it? A sodium channel. Okay, so it's a voltage-gated sodium channel with time in activation gas, because that gate closes. So it inactivates the channel. Why doesn't the action potential start here? No. With, because there are no voltage-gated sodium channels with time and activation gates in this part of the membrane. Here. Right.
So in secretion, they come and they bind, and so they just open up automatically being like that. And then once they come flooding in, that gradient opens up voltage-gated and inactivated sodium gates.
The voltage-gated sodium channels with time activation.
Great, and then they flood down, and then that's the propagation area.
Propagation starts here.
Right.
So when those open, what happens? When those open, sodium comes in. So plus charges accumulate here. You've got a gradient that's going to move down here. There's a gradient here moving across here. This depolarizes and opens the voltage-gated sodium channel time and activation. There are also voltage-gated potassium channels here. Which is it? To inhibit. Oh, okay. What does inhibition mean? What does excitation mean? Pardon?
Excitation means stimulating.
You stimulate the neuron, what does that mean?
It fires.
What does it mean it fires?
It
goes. It gets up and goes. What do you see? If I'm standing there, how do I know if that's been fired? It goes and collects unemployment. How do I know?
Because it travels to the next.
It travels. What travels?
Action? No, it doesn't
travel. Stop. Don't reach up and get a lot of words. Think about what's happening. Alex, what'd you say? Okay? If it's excited, I have an action potential. Right? If it's not excited, I don't have an action potential. Make sense? Very complicated. So now the inquisitive asks, what about inhibition? So what does inhibition mean to you? Cessation of excitation or not allowing excitation to take place. Okay? So, if I have, what would I have to do to inhibit this neuron? I'd have to cause it to hyperpolarize. How could I do that? So now we're saying that we have an inhibitory neurotransmitter that's going to bind to this cell somewhere in the cell membrane, and it binds to some receptor. How could I make this cell body become hyperpolarized so an action potential doesn't occur? If it bounds the receptors for sodium channels, what would it have to do to the sodium channel? It'd have to close it. What else could it bind? Potassium channels. And what would it cause to happen?
Open them.
It causes them to open. So inhibition that we'll not talk about now, we'll talk about more next, more Supreme Court or neuroscience. Inhibition is a situation where this piece of the membrane hyperpolarized.
or the action of positive charges coming in is minimized. Not the action, but the result of positive ions coming in is kind of minimized. How could that happen? What else might I open that we haven't talked about? That we talked about in as much as saying we're not going to talk about?
Chloride
channels. If I open up chloride channels, and their chloride channels open, then when a positive moves across, a chloride will also move across, and what happens to the net charge in here? It will change. We'll talk much more about that screen. You could block the receptors, but we didn't. We talked about the neurotransmitter being an inhibitory neurotransmitter. Okay, one more, and then let's take a break. That's where you start. Yeah, when it's excited, the action potential starts here, the axon hillock, because that's where we begin to see voltage-gated sodium channels with time and activation gates and voltage-gated potassium. Now, I could turn the question around and say, okay, what kind of neuron is this? Now, this you should know about from, you're from anatomy now, because you're talking about nerves and anatomy. What kind of neuron is that? The motor neuron. What other kind of neurons might I expect there to be?
The sensory.
So, what do you think happens in a sensory? If I use this model to explain this, it all makes sense to me. How would I describe a sensory neuron? It works in the opposite direction. So how would it work in the opposite direction? So I'm going to make a sensory. I'm not going to put a synapse down here. I'm going to put a receptor down there, not a cell body, but a receptor. There. What does the receptor do?
Receives.
What kind of receptor might we talk about? Pressure receptor, okay. So if I have a pressure receptor, they don't sense pH. They might sense hydrogen ions, but they don't sense pH. Okay, so what do you think a pressure sensor might do? What might pressure do to that?
Open the sodium channel.
Open sodium channels. So you can't open sodium channels. I push on here, I open sodium channels, sodium comes in, and how do I get an action potential? What must there be? There has to be a depolarization someplace to do what? If the axon hillock, but you know what? There is no axon hillock. Because this is a sensory. So what do you really say? Well, what did you say? There's got to be some place along here where we have the beginning of voltage-gated sodium channels and time of activation gates of voltage-gated potassium channels. So our histological friends won't call that an axon hillock. They call it something else. They call it a trigger zone. Essentially,
let's take 10 minutes. Come back and come on. Ooh, nice. What? I worked on it. Be careful.
Well, this sounds very interesting. And the reason it sounds very interesting to me is that in fact there are sodium ions that are entering here with this action potential here. And we said that the total number of ions that are moving in, sodium ions that are moving in, is very, very, very small compared to the total number of sodium ions in the system. So that the number of ions that are moving in don't really change the overall concentration of sodium in the external fluid, or even in the external fluid. And how in the world, from what we said yesterday, how in the world can, in movement, this longer distance of sodium ions occur in a faster period of time?
It jumps.
It jumps. What do you mean it jumps?
From because it shrinks. Yeah. It goes from one.
Does the sodium jump?
No.
Something jumps. What jumps? What appears to jump? The action potential appears to jump. It appears, it's propagated here and then it's propagated here. But my question is, how can sodium entering here cause this piece of membrane so relatively far away to depolarize so quickly? Of course you can guess. No, you can never guess. One thing that we had in our rules here is that we should never guess, because God forbid we might be right. Go ahead. I don't relate to any of that. Circles, and the black circles are the nuclei of the green cell. Okay. So this signal is going down here, and what am I going to find down here? You already told me about it before. What am I going to find here? A what? A synapse. Alright. So now we need to talk about synapse. You've got to tell me what happens. We've already heard. David's already told us that neural transmitters is released from there, right? So let's look at the. Oh wait a minute! Here's some words. Neurotransmitters released. Okay. What happens in a ganglion? Did you guys talk about ganglia in anatomy yet? Not yet? It was a question of the quiz?
Yeah.
So she must have talked about it because she talks about everything in the quiz.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, she says a collection of cell bodies outside the central nervous system. And what do you find in those collections of cell bodies outside the nervous system? What do you call? What do you find? Synapses. All right. What do you call a collection of cell bodies inside the central nervous system? You know? What?
A ganglion.
Oh, you find a ganglion outside the central nervous system.
Freaking.
What do you call a group of cell bodies inside the central nervous system? Okay. Now, all of you except one person decided, let me access that list, and the one person probably did too. Let me access that list of everything that I have ever associated with the nervous system, and I'll spew them forth as quickly as possible, hoping you won't notice the ones that I missed. It's called a nucleus.
Yay!
Yes, right again. Okay. It's a nucleus. The same thing happens if that collection of cell bodies inside and outside the central nervous system, except they have different names. What is presynaptic?
Before
the synapse. These are hard. What does preganglionic mean?
Before the ganglion.
All right. What does postsynaptic mean?
After.
After the synapse, you're after the game. Okay. What do you expect to happen in the presynaptic cell, the preganglionic cell, from our discussion so far? What do you expect to happen?
Signals of the RPM.
Signals are being propagated down to what? Which thing? Signals are being propagated down to the synapse. Okay. And what happens when it gets down to the synapse? It's still preganglionic. Because is there a synaptic cell? No. A synapse consists of a presynaptic cell and a postsynaptic cell. What's at the end of the presynaptic cell? The synaptic cleft is where? What is a cleft? It's between the two. It's a space between the two. So now we have a presynaptic terminal or presynaptic cell. We have a cleft. And we have a postsynaptic cell. And my question is, what do you think might be happening in the presynaptic cell in the region of the synapse?
It's building up synaptic vesicles for transmitters.
What's happening? She says neurotransmitters and vesicles. Oh, that's neat. Okay. By mechanism, she says, and Chad said, there's some calcium that's causing the release of neurotransmitters from that presynaptic cell. How do you think that comes about? Where does that calcium come from? You think? From the extracellular fluid. And why might that calcium come from the extracellular fluid, do you think? Well, not only because it has hard charges, almost kind of irrelevant to the movement. What's going to cause it to move? The voltage-gated channel is not going to cause it to move. What's going to cause it to move? A gradient. Okay. What kind of gradient?
Calcium.
A calcium concentration gradient. Alright. Got it up so far? This is kind of roundabout, but that's alright. So now, why does doesn't the calcium come into that cell all the time? Because they're gated channels. What kind of gate is there? What kind of there? What gates do you think? You already said that. What's it? Voltage gates. So the voltage has to change in order to open these voltage gated sodium channels with thiamine activation gates, right? Pardon me? Voltage-gated calcium channel? Why would you think that? Oh, because we're talking about calcium. We're not talking about sodium. So, of course, they wouldn't be voltage-gated sodium channels with thiamine activation gate. They'd be voltage-gated calcium channels that are going to open calcium channels that are going to allow calcium to move in. All right. Where is the neurotransmitter inside that cell? Amortola. They're in the vesicles. They're in some vesicles. And we won't worry too much about the molecular mechanism. But the calcium binds to those and moves them along a microstructure to the cell membrane, where they fuse with the cell membrane and do what?
Open up.
So when that cell membrane fuses, the vesicle fuses with the cell membrane, and that opens up. Alex, what do you think causes that neurotransmitter to move out of that region into the synaptic cleft? That's good, okay. So now we have to ask, now, what is it that changes the voltage? So here's what you told me. You told me there was a presynaptic terminal, there's a postsynaptic cell membrane, there's a space between them, and what's in this space? Well, there's some neurotransmitter, but what's the medium through which that moves? Extracellular fluid. Because where do I find out that I have all cells? Extracellular fluid, okay. So you said then that there are going to be some channels. Okay. They have some channels here. That are voltage-gated calcium channels that open up. What causes the voltage-gated calcium channels to open up? A change in voltage. What causes the change in voltage? The action potential being propagated down the membrane. So as the action potential comes down here, sodium enters, depolarizes the cell, causes voltage-gated calcium channels to open. Calcium enters, binds the vesicles, moves the vesicles over, extracytosis, transmitter, diffuses over this side, where, in fact, we find receptors.
Look at the sun every day.
Okay. question was, can I make a flow chart? Can I make a Poisson diagram? Yes. The answer is yes, always yes. So what do we have? We have an action potential moves down, moves along the axon. And that causes depolarization of the presynaptic membrane. Which then opens voltage-gated calcium channels. Which then allows open channel. So that causes, opens, and let's say it opens sodium channels at this point. Sodium channels, this is excitatory, and the open sodium channels now allows sodium to move in.
Cell membrane, where they fuse with the cell membrane checks those diagnoses are fine. We now see an increase in neurotransmitter concentration near the membrane wall, causing a gradient of the movement of neurotransmitters away from the presynaptic terminal toward the postsynaptic terminal. As these arrive at the postsynaptic terminal, some of them, based on probability, numbers of neurotransmitters, molecules, and numbers of receptors, bind to the ligand-gated receptors in the postsynaptic terminal. In the case that we're describing, this is an excitatory process. So that ligand-gated channel is a calcium channel, excuse me, is a sodium channel. The sodium channel is then open, which allows movement of sodium along its gradient from the outside of the cell to the inside of the cell, causing an accumulation and increase in positive charge on the inside of the cell, which we call.
Can you repeat?
That's last three boxes.
Yes.
Say what it says in the boxes in the last three.
I just say,
can you just email this stuff?
Sodium channels.
Okay.
Next.
Allows movement of sodium into the cell.
Depolarization. DOC.
And now, over to our sponsor.
The voltage gauge to consent the voltage gated sodium channels.
Oh, the voltage gated sodium channels with them, yes, okay.
How do they inactivate over time? Do they just all of a sudden shut off?
Oh, that's right. You didn't feel it, yes. A protein. What are these called?
Voltage-gated
sodium channels. The voltage changes across the membrane, which causes the intramolecular forces of proteins to change. And that opens up. It causes agitation. It causes movement of the protein molecule. And after a period of time, that's unique to that protein structure. The other piece of the molecule. Okay? Now, to reopen, you have to push back and close the voltage part. And then that sets up motion. It opens that up again. Okay? I mentioned something about calcium. Where did I mention about calcium? You mentioned about calcium. Per year? You got calcium in the cell. That's not useful. What causes those calcium channels that open? What causes them to close? Okay? What she said is those voltage gated calcium channels open during the action potential when the cell is depolarized and close when the action potential goes by it and now it's repolarized. So how long are they open? Not very long. And I will bring on Monday, I think I have it on here someplace, but I don't remember where it is. On Monday I will bring you a little piece of video that illustrates this process. Are there questions about this? Does this make sense? Right. Let's look at A16. Thank you.
look at page B16. And on page B16, there are some more words. What do you think an excitatory postsynaptic potential is? Define it. Where would I find an excitatory postsynaptic potential? After synapse. Okay. And so, what do you think an excitatory post, based on our earlier conversation, what do you think an excitatory postsynaptic potential is? How would you define it?
The number of lighting lighting gated housing channels that
No, because you told me that the voltage gated calcium channels were calcium channels that were voltage gated on the presynaptic terminal, and you didn't tell me anything about ligand gated calcium channels on the postsynaptic terminal.
So
do you think that the excitatory postsynaptic potential means something about the number of ligand gated sodium channels that are open?
No.
Alex, what's the potential?
It's a gradient.
What is a potential? A difference between the inside of the cell and the outside of the cell. So if it's it's an excitatory postsynaptic potential, where is it? It's after the synapse, it's the cell after the synapse, and if it's an excitatory potential, what does that mean?
It means it lowers the density.
No. It means depolarized. Because in our earlier conversation, we said that we would define something as excitatory if it leads to an action potential. And if it's going to lead to an action potential, it has to depolarize. So that you reach the threshold voltage of the voltage-gated sodium channels with time and activation gate. Someplace. Okay? Depending on where we're talking about here, maybe talking about this particular synapse may be in a cell body, and so we're talking about that the axon hillock. It may be actually at a muscle. About some place on the muscle membrane or so forth. What is an inhibitory post-synaptic potential? Something that causes hyperpolarization. Or, we also talked about life is commuted 15 minutes ago. What else might happen? And so, propose a mechanism that would produce an excitatory postsynaptic potential. Chad, what would you think? you're going to cause an excitatory postsynaptic.
Ligand-gated sodium channels
open. Okay. Ligand-gated sodium channels open. That's one possibility. What's another possibility?
Closes potassium.
Closes potassium channels. Good. Or maybe open some other ionic channel so that a positive ion can enter the cell. We're not going to talk about other ions very much here. We'll do that next report. and propose a mechanism that would result in an inhibitory post-synaptic response.
Opens the passing channel.
Shutting what kind of gates? Okay, it shuts ligand gated sodium channels. What's another possibility?
Opens potassium.
Or opens potassium channels. What's another possibility?
Opens chloride.
Opens chloride channels. All right. We do one more thing, and then next week we're going to start talking about skeletal muscle. Okay, here's the experiment. And what I have here is a length of membrane that does not contain voltage-gated sodium channels and time of activation gates, voltage-gated. So I have a piece of cell membrane, for example, from the cell solar. Right? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put some positive ions in here. And at various distances from where I put it in, I'm going to measure the membrane. Okay. And then I'm going to plot the membrane potential as a function of the distance. I'm going to go down a distance and I'm going to measure the potential. I'm going to go down another distance and I'm going to measure the potential. And what you see here is that over distance, the potential becomes less. I put in positive charges, and what do they do? What do they do? They move. And what causes them to move?
The gradients.
And what do they do as they move?
They get less and less.
Why do they get less and less? Why is there less here than there is here? Because it dispersed along this volume. What does the picture show?
We've got as many as we believe. The first one, there's a huge potential, and the next one, it just has to be a little less than the first one, and then the third one only has to be a little less than the second one.
What do you mean
one?
It has to be?
Well, they're also screwed up the radius. You're going to move to the higher concentrations, lower concentrations. So in order to have that movement in one direction, you need the higher concentration to the left.
Okay, let's see what you said. You said, in order to move from here to here, the concentration has to be greater here than here. Okay? If we look at the picture, what is the picture also tell us that it does what? It moves out. What causes it to move out? A gradient. And why can they move out? Because they're leak channels. So the gradient is causing flow in all directions through their path. Causing flow in this direction, this also causes flow in that direction. So when we get to this point, the reason it's less than that point is because I'm on left. Okay? When we get to this point, there's less here because much left. And so this really tells me about how much is left. And we're going to talk about this length, the distance. We're going to give it a name. We're going to call it a length constant. Length constant. And what that means in engineering terms is that at one length constant, we have lost 67% of the signal. Now, if you're interested in where that 67% comes from, it's an exponential process. And what you see here is that, in essence, after about five length constants, it's even greater. That's a standard kind of engineering thing that you hear about time constants and length constants and all kinds of things like that. But what does it really tell me? Take one more minute here. If the length constant is short from this picture, what does that mean? No, volume is the same. There are more leak channels. So if the length constant is short, it tells me that there are more leak channels. The membrane is more permeable. And if the length constant is very long, it says there's a lot of ions that stay in there. So now, what we'll talk about on Monday, we'll look at Monday for a brief moment or two, is a situation where we have, which is on the next page, a situation where we have a cell membrane, a cell soma, that have, or two cells that have different length constants in their membrane. And we'll see what the effect is on the exon.